Taking Stock. Today is July 3rd, 2024. We're just getting in ahead of Independence Day, and it's been a great week so far. Looking forward to taking this Taking Stock session to go over a recent announcement that we had just posted over at the YDRS Twitter and on all of our other socials, and go into a bit more detail about that. This will be, of course, folks are welcome, as usual, to come on in and express their thoughts and join into the conversation. I always love that about this platform. People are going to be continually welcome to do that. So I'll just let people up as they would like during the course of the discussion here. And one thing that I'll also be doing just shortly is posting a link to some articles where people that are interested can read a bit more about the DUNA legislation, which we'll be speaking about shortly, on their own, either reading along with me, because I'll be referencing some things in here, or, of course, reading on their own. So let's see, I'll get that in the nest just now. All right, great. Got that posted. Just wanted to make sure to have that out, as the managing the nest in addition to speaking is just something I'm still getting a handle on, practically a year into doing this weekly podcast, or however long it's been. So, all right. It's just a very exciting time, everyone. You may be able to hear my smile because I'm just thrilled to have been able to take this step. So if you didn't see the announcement from the @YDRS account or on any of the other associated socials or on our website, then let me just detail that as of yesterday, the 2nd of July, YDRS was able to successfully submit paperwork and be accepted as a decentralized, unincorporated, nonprofit association in the state of Wyoming. I know that is a mouthful, and we'll get into a bit more of that just shortly. But this is a brand new law, a brand new filing type and entity type, which just became available for application on the 1st of July after a law was passed in March of 2024. So they're moving it through pretty quick over there, just a 4-month turnaround time to actually get the thing on the books and opened up for applicants. This actually is particularly interesting. Now, Wyoming, if you're someone familiar kind of in the crypto space, who's been watching some of the emergent legal developments and entity type developments throughout the last couple of years, they've historically been one of the areas which is sort of on, I guess I'd say, like the cutting edge maybe when it comes to identifying these different types of crypto entities. And so that decentralized unincorporated nonprofit association, or DUNA, is the, far from the first example. And so Wyoming is now the only state in the U.S. which is allowing for this kind of filing. And, it may be that that's going to become much more normal, but, we'll cross that bridge as we come to it. And what was really exciting, I actually drove up. I don't live too far from the capital of Wyoming. And I was so excited about doing this that as soon as we had all our paperwork together, I actually drove out there to Cheyenne and filed this paperwork in person and was able to confirm with the processor that although we weren't the first to file, people had got there before us to file, but they didn't have their paperwork in order. And so we're the first one to actually appear on the books. Does not really make that much of an effective difference, but boy, I do think that's quite cool. So, all right, enough about all that. What is a DUNA? And then why did we decide that this would be a sensible thing to set up under and to use that as a structure for what we're trying to do? Let me just step into that a little bit. I'm trying to decide what order I want to go in here. I'm kind of flying off the cuff. There's a lot of excitement. If you've been listening to Taking Stock for a while, then you already know that we have been really excited about the idea of broad investor advocacy and reforms in the modern markets, seeking to provide more information about custody, about ownership, and really drawing a parallel, I think, with our speech between you know, we in the crypto space, I think it's quite understood, all these different custody sort of ideas. And it's not really quite so well understood in the stock market space. You know, there's a, although there are communities like the ones that, you know, the one that listens to this podcast at this time, probably a lot of you guys already know, but the vast majority of regular retail investors don't realize that if you own stock in a brokerage, you don't technically own that stock. You have, you know, an entitlement, you have a beneficial owner. You can be entitled to receive the gains or losses, you know, the profit outcome or the losses, or you can be entitled to cast votes, but you don't have that technical ownership. And so that's where that DRS and why DRS comes from. And because this advocacy effort is so bottom up, right? There, this, it's not as though any of this stuff is new. The central depository system that I'm referring to just there, where so much of the ownership is consolidated into a single entity, has been around for more than 50 years. It's just that the information has not parsed the, you know, the common lexicon, or it's not in the Overton window, or it's not commonly discussed by financial participants in the system today. There's so much focus on other things than, you know, actual custody. And so when it came time, I mean, you know, we've been, let's see, YDRS started as an idea probably about 2 years ago. It made its first public appearance when we had the good fortune to meet with Gary Gensler in February of 2023. We took that opportunity. That was myself and Bibik and Miller, a couple other folks that help with the DRS advocacy effort. We took that opportunity to wear some YDRS branding and express that this is a an effort that goes beyond any individual stock or any individual, you know, type of investor. This is something that every different market participant can benefit to familiarize themselves with, to learn from, and to be able to make more educated decisions about their custody. So yeah, that was about 18 months ago. And as the months have gone by, we have developed plenty of things over at YDRS.org. My favorite of which is probably still the YDRS database, which I got to get back to doing weekly updates on. We had a good habit going there on taking stock, but it got away from me at some point. So audience, I'm sorry about that. We'll get back to that, especially as we are able to introduce and expect more community engagement. So in any case, you know, what is Aduna and why did we end up deciding that that was going to be the best route to go? That's kind of what I want to touch on here. So, you know, with all that preamble aside, so let's kind of break down, I guess, this acronym, Decentralized Unincorporated Nonprofit Association. That if we take it one step at a time here, we know that the decentralized bit, we're saying that there is no central governing authority. There's no central physical presence. This is the part of it which is referring to that DAO governance. You know, so the general expectation of the Wyoming law, which is also linked there in the NEST, is that we're going to be using some type of DAO governance system to determine the rulings, the regulations, the priorities, the developed efforts, the distribution of different kinds of funds. I mean, lots of different things, but broadly speaking, you know, the decision-making process is expected to take place by that community. And there's a lot of openness written into the law about how the given organization is choosing to distribute that. And we'll touch on that a bit later. I'll talk a bit about our plans for that. And so stay tuned. But that's essentially the decentralized bit. Unincorporated is just saying that it's not like an LLC. It's not a business, but it is a legally recognized entity. So we have, you know, you get to have an EIN. You know, after going through the IRS application process, you are going to be doing all that sort of thing, but you're not an LLC that's trying to operate in that kind of way. Funnily enough, you know, I mentioned that Wyoming was first to punch on a lot of these different issues. So they, a couple of years ago, passed a law called the Decentralized Autonomous Organization Supplement, which was essentially like this DUNA, but for a LLC to operate digitally and without a central location. And that was also like a landmark emergent new thing that Wyoming was first to do. So they have a history of kind of trying to define these emergent governance types as technology continues to develop. Third, nonprofit. That's easy. Essentially, the idea here is that the collective is going to be trying to continually redirect, you know, if there is monies generated through, you know, X or Y means or through donations or whatever it might be, then that's going to be funneled back into efforts which help to propagate the stated goals of the organization, like any other advocacy-based nonprofit. And then association, you know, that's just group of folks. So hence DUNA, Decentralized Unincorporated Nonprofit Association. That's what they've gone with. And it's pretty catchy. So why are we excited about this specifically? Because initially, as you, if you followed our, you know, speaking on this for a while, if you're part of our Discord community, then you may have known that we were thinking about trying to formalize as a nonprofit for many months already. Now, the appeal of introducing the decentralized aspect, the DAO governance aspect, is because it allows us to bring in a practically limitless, right, group of other retail investors that are similarly interested to help to develop this advocacy effort and other associated resources. I've talked before about how I feel that when it comes to custody, there is a inherent self-interest that is shared by investors and by issuers, where, you know, everyone wants what is best for the company that they're invested with or that they're managing, that they're on the board of, whatever it might be. And there are all of these outside influences that exist in the modern market. That's, you know, in terms of an education perspective, that is what YDRS, you know, broadly speaking, is going to try to increase the, I guess I'll call it awareness, you know, try to penetrate the consciousness of the investing public and help to better develop that. And my anticipation is that we can really benefit from an extremely broad coalition of market participants realizing that they have this, you know, inherent self-interest once they reach a level of comprehension regarding these nuances, and that's going to incite them to want to participate. And, you know, if you look at what we did with the YDRS database, where the, you know, the output is completely open and free to access, and the input is completely volunteer generated, that gives you a good snapshot into what I'd like to imagine is possible for many other projects and outreaches under this broader umbrella. You know, we have this opportunity for folks to realize that they, you know, that it's valuable for them to contribute if they have some given expertise to this effort. And the decentralized, autonomous organizative nature of a DAO is going to allow them not only to contribute, but to participate in the ongoing governance. And I think that is going to allow us an incredible fluidity that's going to allow us to have that broad reach that I had alluded to. And of course, that's going to create a incredible sense of community and cohesion over time, where everyone is interested in helping others understand custody, is developing a self-engagement. It's something that I think we already see. I mean, the effort wouldn't exist, I suppose, without a subset of really driven people that have put so much of themselves into providing information and data online. But that's something that is continuing to grow in our other online communities, where we have folks who are just terrific, digging into documents, reading and analyzing and working on language, because it is tough to parse, and it takes a village to really develop these understanding and these resources. So that's what, you know, that excites me about welcoming all those different perspectives from the extremely broad and wide reach of the financial markets. That I think the growth potential there is really incredible, which kind of brings me to why it's so important to also be nonprofit, right? Now, naturally, you get all these people together and everyone is contributing their knowledge and expertise. It doesn't have to be custody knowledge or financial instrument knowledge, but it could be, you know, graphic design, or it could be just sharing articles socially. You know, there are so many different ways to contribute that aren't directly content-based, right? So, and that's something that we'll certainly explore as a group, but ultimately this is a lot of effort and it's a lot of data. And what was so important for our team, and I think for everyone that's looking on as well, is that the broader picture about helping individuals develop this better understanding and to explore alternative market structures, maybe that are more custody focused, that are going to be more equitable for your regular retail investor and, you know, and for your issuer as well. If you have the profit motive, stepping in and just doing what it does, centralizing discussion, you know, influencing decision making, influencing policy, it's a lightning rod for justified criticism. And if we can stick to this nonprofit model where it is known from the start, right, that your contributions are for this greater good, that is going to not only help maintain the focus on that mission statement, but it's also going to, in my thinking, help to ensure that we have the highest quality of contribution, the highest level of engagement of the people that are, you know, really passionate about this stuff. Because if you were, you know, if you're the sort of person who's only in it for some kind of return, like an ROI, then, you know, then it may not be feasible for you to contribute. And so we're not going to be focused on a monetary feedback loop. And the idea is to continually focus on the message and to grow in that way. And I think that's going to be the most sustainable over time, not only in terms of developing something really, really useful, but to create something that is resilient to the criticism that I much anticipate we will receive from market incumbents, which, you know, I won't get into the hypothetical things on this episode, I don't think, but suffice to say, I think it's well worth setting that aside, setting profit aside, I mean, and as an organization, entirely focusing on the message and on the potential of, you know, of a market where people understand these nuances and how different that would be. Yeah, so it's just an extremely exciting time so far as that goes to have something on paper. And I guess, you know, I see we've got some listeners, you know, certainly anyone who is interested to come on up, feel free. I'd love to have you. And beyond that, I would be, now the next thing on my little agenda here is to touch on some of the emergent futures, the upcoming steps, what things are coming up next. And then after that, I will talk a bit about the structure aspect, you know, what sort of things are we going to try to, let's see, how to say. So there's what's coming up next. Why don't I just do that rather than trying to lay out a whole different thing, huh? There's two parts of it, right? So there's on the DAO front and on the nonprofit front. The nonprofit front, we still will need to go through a application and approval process with the IRS. So that's something where, you know, it will be doing things like more closely defining, like there needs to be a board of directors, needs to be these various aspects, like a you know, actual mission, you know, written mission statement, and these different things. Where I'm anticipating that we can build those together as a community. We've got some drafts, we've got some ideas, but that's something where if you're interested to participate in that process, then definitely join the DRS Discord. That's linked on the in the header and footer over at ydrs.org. And just, you know, pop in, say hello. And at the moment, there's always a ton of interesting discussion going on there. And we're definitely going to be looking to cant towards more discussion on like these specific, I guess I'll call them like docket items, so that we can be well prepared and make sure that we are engaging with the community and doing something which is transparent and has a group input, because we don't yet have the second half finalized and figured out, which is that DAO half. So to speak to that a bit, you know, the DUNA paperwork, you know, it stipulates, of course, that we're going to be using this kind of distributed framework for decision making, but it did not expect that we already had that framework to point at. It's content with us to indicate that's our goal and that's how we will be operating. But we're not, you know, technically operating yet. So that part of it will be to set up things like, you know, deciding what blockchain we're operating on as a community, talking about the governance tokens, and talking about what kind of feedback loop we want to orchestrate such that we can continually engage with and grow the community of people that are operating within this decentralized governance. All of that, again, we've got drafts that we'll be sharing and looking to bring in broad community input on. And I'm very excited for that process. To give a sneak peek into some of my favorite ideas, I especially love a concept of ensuring that the individuals who have the largest voices in this, you know, democratic DAO organization are the ones that have been actively contributing and growing the efforts. Now, that's easy to say. That sounds great, right? Of course, we want for there to be a positive feedback loop between the individuals that are helping to broaden the resources and horizons of this group effort. It makes sense for those to be the ones that have that to also maybe have a slightly more influence over how the funds are spent or how, you know, this or that happens to work. But there's a lot of nuance there. You know, what designates helping the effort? Is it writing articles? Is it fact checking, proofreading, translating, making videos or other content, sharing that content online, or more practical things like, you know, moderating a server online or contributing to we'll be setting up a GitHub account and looking to on-ramp things like the the code behind the YDRS database, you know, is semi-public right now, but will be more public in the future. And, you know, if you're going to be contributing to that, like, how does that weigh in? So there's a lot of nuance in how these different things actually will break out. But broadly speaking, I think, trying to organize a system under which those actively contributing and furthering the effort, you know, those are the ones that that I'd expect are going to be the best resources for just continuing to steer the ship. And I'm looking forward to having those kinds of conversations. There's been some other great ideas I've seen, like, we might have evergreen things that we're looking for. Like, for example, translations is one that pops to mind again to help make the webpage accessible for investors that, you know, although they're investing in U.S. stocks, maybe they are not domestically based. There are plenty of international investors. The U.S. market is, you know, the largest market and is extremely popular for investors, American and non-American alike. So having translations on our, informational web pages to assist with that is going to be really important. But setting aside evergreen items like that, we could also introduce, say, a bounty system where maybe, you know, a couple of users band together that have, you know, X governance tokens, and they indicate, we really think we need a deep dive article on, you know, on one subject or another subject. What's an example? Maybe going into great detail about how you can hold in your own name the investments of an IRS. I'm sorry, an IRA. You know, what are your different options there? We've got a guide about that, but it could be more detailed. And that's the sort of thing I'd love to see community input to help develop. There are a variety of options. You can try to organize self-directed, open your own LLC, find a custodian. I guess you could always divest it, pay the taxes, and buy the stock you want DRS, you know, but it's easy enough to rattle those off. But there's a lot of detail that we could ask for from, I'm sure the community, if it doesn't already have experts, that it will have experts as we continue to grow these resources and the scope of what we're offering and capable of offering. So that's a really exciting thing to me is I'm very interested to see how the conversations break down when it comes to working on this distribution framework. I will, definitely be on the lookout again in the online communities for more details about how these different programs, like what kind of, I guess I'll call them drafts or ideas what we have so far. But the beautiful thing about this technology is that we have a complete freedom to really decide for ourselves this distribution framework and the matrix within which people will participate. And no matter what it is that we choose, what shape that takes, it's operating on a transparent blockchain, which can be audited by anyone. You know, there's no question about its validity, and any third party, you don't have to be involved with us to look it over and to see exactly what is happening and to, provide commentary if you want to. And that, that focus on transparency, I guess, one more thing I'll say just about this system and about the desire to also operate as a nonprofit as well, is that putting transparency at the forefront is not just, sure, it makes things easier, like, makes accounting easier, makes, tracking the democratic process easier. But it's also leading by example. There is so much obfuscation and opacity and asymmetric informational availability in the legacy financial markets where market incumbents just control a gigantic portion of what is available. And it's not really feasible for regular investors to access a meaningful fraction of the information which is out there. And it does not have to be that way. The technology is here for a more transparent structure. And I think it's also going to be neat to, it's apples and oranges, right? Obviously, we're not it's apples and oranges in that right now we're talking about a platform for ideas and advocacy. But at the same time, it's talking about it scaling outwards of this kind of technology and how eventually the legacy infrastructure is going to have to answer for it one way or the other. It's not as though the exchange of the future that can operate with 2T0 and is completely transparent with all of its transactions. Like that's not some mystery that can easily exist. And the modern financial infrastructure is going to have to be able to step up to the plate about that, whether it means they try to incorporate that technology themselves or they try to do what many monopolistic entities do and bury their competition, or they duke it out in the free market. All of this remains to be seen, but introducing more resources so that investors can better parse these distinctions and get familiar with transparency, I think is going to be really, really valuable. And that's another thing that excites me about this structure. So let's see. Yeah. It's just exciting stuff. Again, let's see. So we've gone over what's a doona. We've gone over some of the immediate next steps that we're talking about and how we want to bring in the community and why it's important for the community to be able to see that change and to create that change really themselves. And I know we've got a bit more listeners now. If anyone does want to come up again, more than welcome, but it's an exciting day. And there's plenty of more exciting things to come. We'll be looking forward to incorporating as much community input as possible in this interim period while it's still, I guess I'll call it more. Well, you know, we don't have that DAO yet. We don't have that complete framework in place yet, right? But we're still going to be looking to, because we don't have it yet, we can't use it to develop it. But in the interim, we're going to be welcoming as much community input as possible using traditional third-party systems like our Discord channels and like these social media platforms to continually engage and to build on that conversation before we can really introduce and transition to something which is more equitable and something which is more, you know, community-based. So with that, you know, caveat, I'm sure everyone understands, you know, how we can't quite use it yet, but that's because we're building it now and we're so excited to do that. I see. Oh, and John, welcome. How are you, John?
Hey, Chad, it's doing stellar. And I think you're underselling yourself here on this being a very important day. You've done such an incredible job getting all the documentation together to move forward on this, as has the broader community, as we've been discussing this for months. And even just in the last month, talking to a lot of major Web3 projects that are using this DAO framework. I know when we started what we were working on, everyone that sees any kind of crypto project immediately says, take it out of the States. Do it internationally, skirt the rules. And unfortunately, it's an approach that a lot of projects have taken and subsequently had material legal challenges with. And so to have the first nonprofit DAO in the United States really is a paramount and incredible achievement, I'd say. And it's all based off of your efforts driving extensively to actually get this done in person to make sure everything was tip-top, outright, and done to the T of the law. It is really amazing, Chive. So kudos to you on that. Really incredible work there.
And special shout out to John, who helped to curate the paperwork and develop exactly what was needed in the context of the emergent Wyoming law, which was just posted in full the day before. So that had to be done quite quickly. And as I mentioned earlier, I did confirm with the at the state secretary's office in Wyoming that there were multiple other submissions, which were all denied for not being properly. Their application was improper or missing elements. But thanks to a detail-oriented and careful eye, we were able to avoid that. So definitely it's a group effort. And, you know, of course, 18 months already of a ton of, you know, group contributions from people all around the world. And that's just the beginning. So, and John, boy, you made a great point there that I kind of want to follow up on and touch on, that it is really valuable in the context of, you know, our stated goal to advocate for and introduce, you know, a desire for change and modernization in the financial markets, that we are based in America. You know, there, that right there is something which, you know, as you said, a lot of similar efforts that, you know, are in similar spaces, often with a crypto focus, but often it is, you know, an advocacy focus, that chose to base themselves elsewhere, either because, you know, of course, this legal regulatory framework opportunity is brand new. So, you know, if they wanted to organize earlier, they would have had to do it elsewhere. But we did choose to wait until this came along, because there's a feeling that being domestically based is going to help back the idea and the truth that we are, you know, absolutely interested in improving the market for retail participants and for issuers, and making things make more sense, be more accessible. And this is a process about the U.S. market. It's not, that we're literally an outside entity coming in. We are domestic, and we're looking to help influence this system.
Yeah, I'm with you there, Chives. I completely agree that we have a very unique opportunity to make a material change to the most advanced, developed, and liquid capital market on the planet, which currently exists in the U.S., even though these self-custodial challenges are very real and material difficulties faced globally. I think we have the chance here, as I've said internally, but maybe not publicly, we can build on the past century of securities regulations and the most, best case law, longest case, that the most case studies and the most complex financial challenges between investors and companies, innovators and regulators have come down in these United States. And it is that base lane that we can really build on, which personally is really inspiring, because today, as I've communicated with the community, I've stopped talking to VC just because this does need to be something without that profit motive that can really, in the long term, execute and scale without extractive rents. However, I had been moving around a lot lately, and I had a good friend who put in, I was doing a favor for, talking to a prominent firm in Atlanta. And interestingly, they have also the CEO runs a nonprofit, a 501c3 traditional foundation, just as many traditional foundations exist without this DAO governance, without this distributed ownership, and without this tradition, without this innovative Web3 framework of actually putting the capital, the means of production, and the action to produce results in the hands of the individuals doing it themselves, rather than the top 1% providing a little bit of startup capital. And it emerged that this charitable foundation that was associated with this guy's venture fund, which claimed and purports to support small seed stage idea, building out product, achieving market growth, was actually really just a tool used to provide additional funding to companies that they had a private equity stake in. And that is a fundamental crux and challenge, not just of nonprofits, but of the opaque nature of capital itself, in a world where you really can't see or don't know where companies raise, who their interests are aligned with, and what the nature of their operations are ultimately designed to benefit. Recently, I saw a video talking about private equity firms and some critiques. They have certainly some ways of doing things with leverage, and it has, there's a lot to dive into there on the way that they try to grow business by taking on debt and scaling and oftentimes cutting jobs. And the realization came to me when the person that made this video is actually part of a media group, and that media group was owned 47% by a private equity firm. And they uncovered that in the process of building this independent piece of journalism. And it just comes to realize that in a world where we let opaque, rent-seeking, and the top 1% of our society own, control, and dictate the direction of our future, it can put us in a tribal, challenged, and uncertain space that just does not need to exist in an age where we have these technologies to build transparent systems, to allocate capital fairly, and to do it on a best efforts win-win basis, where there's not a single point of extraction. And instead, it's just a universal system that works for everyone, executes for the public benefit, and doesn't need to have its own stake in the matter. And that's why I'm really excited about what we've done here. Is the first nonprofit DAO in the United States is really building something not designed from the core tenant to operate for its own benefit, but something that is aligned with a larger vision that you've so expertly crafted over the years, Chives, as we've grown and continue to grow, into building something that just works, a market that operates for the benefit of its participants in a system of capitalism not designed for the 1%, not for Wall Street or Sand Hill, but for investors like us to fund innovators that can really make an impact on this planet.
Yeah. Oh, well said as always. Yeah, I mean, it is a really wonderful opportunity to be able to take this step and to continue to build on the goodwill that the goodwill that the community is so kind to levy towards those of us that have contributed to this cause, towards the resources that have been developed, and this broader, grander opportunity in future where through an understanding of their custodial rights and a better framework of what a system could be, we'll see investors, I think, as other opportunities, present themselves, more investors will then choose to, avail of the current system because they recognize its faults. And, that is we're still a speck, I think, a speck at the top of a hill, but that snowball is growing as each new person, develops a foundational understanding of what is possible and, of lots of things, of what is possible, of what the current fundamental issues are, and of the concept, of the very real concept that it does not need to be some certain way when year after year, especially in these last several, retail investor capital just is becoming a larger and larger portion of the markets. And, without getting into all the different ways that that is abused today, we have some articles on our site. Check those out over at ydrs.org. But suffice to say, it's abused in a lot of ways. And people, I think people are perceptive, right? They've known for a long time, before 2008, during, since, they've known that Wall Street is not treating them fairly. But it's very difficult to actually put a perceptive and concise explanation as to how that's happening. And that's definitely one of our hurdles. It puts me in mind of a really great I had some outreach just earlier today from a community member who said that, I think the information's great, but I only can really appreciate it because I already understand what you're talking about. There needs to be more building blocks. There needs to be more ways to onboard people that just, that don't know the first thing about this stuff yet. How can we get to them? How can we speak to them? And those are exactly the kind of conversations I'm excited to have with the community to broaden the horizons and to invite more people to come on board. And what's really exciting, John, and everyone, is that as we continue to grow, as we continue to diversify the message and make the information more accessible, then that inherent community grows, which allows for even more input, which allows for more and broader reach. And it's a positive feedback loop, which will ultimately result in a revolutionary change in the density of understanding in the population of investors that we have in this market. And that's just a really exciting thought that it absolutely keeps me going every day.
Wow, I love that, Chad. Sounds like a lot of tremendous motivation on your end.
Well, sure. And I think that same thing, maybe probably said a little differently for each person, but I think broadly that same sentiment echoes within the minds of a lot of our current user base and listener base, and everyone is interested in helping grow this. Just thankful that we have what a wonderful community, a wonderful community of people that are ready, I think, to help out even more using some of the tools that we're talking about developing here.
Speaking of, yeah, there, Chives. And excited that we can really just build something that works for the world.
Yeah, same here. Same here. It'll be a long process, certainly, but I think it'll be a fun process too. Yeah, I think that's part of the special sort of mental state, I guess. You know, it's important that we recognize that this is challenging, but also have that excitement within us to rise to that challenge and to try to instigate something really meaningful. And I'm, you know, definitely excited. There's just so many great individuals in the community that have already done so much, and it would not be possible for me to have done anything that we talked about on this call without them. And I mean, it, to the point where I wouldn't even want to say that it's my accomplishment, right? It's not at all. It's the accomplishment of all of the contributors. And even then, it's more than that. It's the accomplishment of the broader community of people that helped to create an environment where everyone is feeling comfortable to spend their time towards working at this and building it up over a period of well over a year and getting to this point and continuing to grow. And I guess if you take even another step back, maybe we owe just a little bit of thanks for this groundswell of motivation to the market incumbents who in their absolute brazen nature decided to bring all of us together by shutting the buy button off in 2021. Because that's certainly what I think a lot of people's motive, you know, that was the wake up moment where people got really curious and started to turn over the stones, which eventually and quickly led to realizing that, CD & Co. technically owned 99.9% of outstanding shares, and that there was a real problem brewing under the surface.
Yeah, I'm with you there, Chives. I, kind of missed that boat myself and have been working on it for other reasons, as we talked about in other episodes. And it's so incredible to see this particular individual I was just talking with today. Very smart guy. He was trading the amount of American federal bonds. He was trading the same as some other sovereign nations at major institutions growing up, and has an extensive experience on the incumbent financial side for these trading mechanisms, and also actually built some structured products and derivatives that are still in use today, even though they were created over 15 years ago. And incredibly, I had him look up a particular security, which has doubled in value today, based off of these material market structure problems that the community is well aware of. And this particular stock is well known, and everyone's sort of been aware of the naked shorting and manipulation of its prices alongside a basket of other stocks. And he had no clue about it, but I had him look it up, and all he saw was Roaring Kitty. And ultimately, there's so much more here than a consensus of individuals coming together online to buy or speculate, or whatever you want to call it, for a couple of stocks. It's really a structural flaw in the way that we've designed these centralized capital markets. And there's just a gleam of individuals that are really starting to understand that because of, like you said, the frozen buy button, because of the ongoing lack of transparent information from these giant, it's hard to think of the scale of this one monopoly that runs the entire American financial system. And then the people that own that have interests in the global financial system. I mean, it's really something of such large proportion that almost nobody even can contemplate, which is just, it's bizarre, because you'd think that this wouldn't be something you had to deal with, like the Federal Reserve. You would think that that's something the government has all taken care of. And yet here we are uncovering these very material, structural, and systematic risks, challenges, and ultimately, I mean, as I've said before, documented on in writing, there's a real chance that there are going to be some large bankruptcies, crashes, material challenges that face our markets, if we can't fix collectively, ongoingly, and sustainably the challenge of how do we account for who has stock? Because apparently the brokers, the CSDs, and the controlling forces to be in that arena just have this perverse incentive to create more shares than exist and to lend them out and to profit and profit and profit off of the backs of retirements and the longstanding portfolios of investors themselves, not the big ones, but the little ones like you and I. And it's just not right. It just can't stand. And it just will not. It's a house of cards, honestly. And so that's why we need a sustainable, long-term, and community-driven solution, in my view, to really fix all this.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And that right there is what, you know, the major hurdle is helping more individuals, more individual investors understand that and breaking it down into base concepts, which are motivating, which is a big task. But that's something which absolutely can be done. And, you know, boy, John, I'm thinking about now, you know, another huge benefit, you know, I guess to them of this opacity. Now, let's say you've just mentioned comes to pass. There are big bankruptcies. There's massive market turmoil. There are jobs lost. There are, you know, just huge negative events for the, I guess we'll say, stability of the legacy market infrastructure. You know, because of this legacy of opacity and all of the laws that they've, I shouldn't even say laws, all the rules that they've passed, because these are predominantly what are called self-regulating organizations. So they essentially govern themselves with minimal oversight from government financial bodies. But, you know, these rules they've passed to protect themselves. If, you know, if and when this massive turmoil comes to pass, it's going to be extremely difficult to parse fault, to parse severity, to clearly define what needs to happen in order to return to some kind of equilibrium, to, you know, foment any kind of justice. You know, those things are going to be extremely difficult. And for a microcosmic example of that, and I shouldn't even say microcosmic because it's a gigantic example, look at 2008. You know, one Swiss banker goes to jail for like 4 years, and you know, it's like, you know, the complicit problem from thousands upon thousands of individuals, dozens of gigantic companies, tons of money made by these gluttonous individuals at the top. And, you know, we will see, you know, it's not like that was the first time that happened. And it won't be the last time that it happens without major systemic reform and adjustment towards transparency. Because not only does that help solve issues in the moment, right? We wouldn't have these issues with naked shorting where, you know, we go from 3 years ago on CNBC, people saying that it's a myth and doesn't happen, to it slowly being admitted to, you know, happening. You know, the market makers are approved to do it in certain market conditions, but, oh, you know, they totally, you know, make everything match again, you know, after the transaction window is through and things are delivered. To eventually, you know, maybe they're not doing that actually. And we've seen plenty of indications that's happening. And if things were transparent, then, well, maybe they'd still be happening under the current framework, but investors would be able to review that and see that, and it could be reflected in market activity and sentiment, and you know, and issuers would be able to you know, maybe do something vocally about it. It'd be a completely different market environment if there was that transparency. And then, you know, to follow up from what I was just speaking on, if there was that transparency and there was still a whole bunch of mismanagement, it'd be easily accountable and people would be culpable and be forced to answer for it. And I think that is really important to keep in mind as well, that, you know, transparency gives you a lot of benefits, not only on the front end, but on the back end. It gives you benefits not only when it comes to preventing crises, but to handling crises as well. There are so many positives. and the technology is here. So I'm really of the mind that, through custodial education and through education about how the financial system works and what technology is capable of when it comes to providing stable alternatives, this is a one-way trip ideally to transition into a better market structure, just a matter of how long it takes to get there and what kind of shape that journey takes.
Yeah, I remember there was a hearing from FDIC with joint participation from the Bank of England, and they were discussing some of the very material systemic risks of CCP bankruptcy in relation to a lot of the sentiments in the Great Taking. And about halfway through this three-hour hearing, the bankers start saying, people don't need to know about these challenges. They don't need to understand that the entire system is at risk of bankruptcy if two participants fail. They don't need to understand how the stock exchanges are handling their money, just like they don't need to understand what insurance companies are doing with their money, because, why would we want the public to be informed about the actual economic system their retirement portfolios are based on? And I remember just seeing the backlash in the comments and the criticisms of this gatekept and withheld information that would be abundantly apparent should there be this kind of transparent data that you're talking about, where the capitalization of major American clearing firms is fractions of the value of assets in those systems. And even just slight miscalculations, as have happened in the past because of just basic rudimentary computer glitches, and these are documented in our SEC comments, has led to tens of millions of lost margin on broker accounts that creates margin calls out of the blue for brokers, just like the margin call on some of the leading brokers that created the freeze of buying in 21. It's all quite a system built on trust of a couple of 1%er groups that have built systems over the past 50 years that still run on mainframe COBOL servers that really could use a bit of public transparency. And that's based off discussions with BTCC engineers. And that's documented on our blog. So definitely an unbelievable amount of improvement that I think anybody would naturally just, if you're just an engineer who has a couple extra hours a week and you care even remotely about the stock market, like these are blatantly obvious things to improve that are so unbelievably outdated that it's, there's the OCC, for example, in that comment. They're using, we talked about this on the podcast, code that was supposed to be put out of life over two decades ago. These are just easy things to fix that don't get fixed because nobody knows it's a problem. Nobody can see the infrastructure itself, and that creates these flash crashes. It creates Berkshire Hathaway being a penny a share. It creates these unbelievable flashes of volatility that need to be centrally controlled, manipulated, and rectified. I mean, that's not how you create scalable, quality global financial infrastructure. You don't put all your faith and trust in the New York Stock Exchange that if something goes wrong, they're just going to fix it. Like we saw how that worked in 2008. We saw how that worked in the 80s. It's not a functional, long-standing, sustainable way to build a uniquely global capital system, which is exactly what we need in an age where borders are disappearing and the trade of securities, ideas, and value itself needs to become something that's just a little bit more democratic.
Yeah, absolutely. I view it as an intensely, bipartisan issue. I mean, that maybe oversimplifying it implies like there's only two sides. What I mean to say is that, this is something that I think, given that they are recognizing the problem at hand and the solutions on offer, that all individuals, at that time are going to think, oh yeah, well, this just makes sense. I mean, look, as you just eloquently pointed out, there are decades old issues, which it's not as if these things are, I wouldn't even go so far as to say they're unknown, John. I might even say that, sure, these issues might be known, but they're not prioritized. And why would that be? It's because, I would say there's two things I'd point at. There's first the bureaucracy involved when you are a legacy, you know, regulated organization, when it comes to adjusting these rules, you know, there you're going to have to go through a check and balances process amongst your members. For example, in the case of the DTCC, that's, you know, made up of a variety of different member brokers and clearing houses that are going to you know, weigh in on these adjustments. And that leads into the second issue, which is again that there is this perverse incentive where, you know, broker, you know, they benefit or, you know, could theoretically benefit by introducing this opacity. I mean, there's a million ways in which they could, and plenty of ways in which they do, and they've been fined by the SEC for it. But, you know, allegedly, some might say that they're doing plenty of things which they're not caught on, which they're not fined for. Or others might say that those fines are minuscule, that they're a cost of doing business, and that, you know, they're really more of a hush metric than they are any kind of deterrent. And, you know, for these reasons, it may not be feasible to expect, without some sort of new outside pressure influencing a desire for change within the legacy organization, you know, it may not be possible or reasonable to expect that they make these simple adjustments to provide better outcomes for this huge swath of market participants. And that is the stonewall, I think, that we've been watching at work as all of us have become more aware of the problem. Or maybe I should say instead, the stonewall we've been watching not at work. Just some fun wordplay.
Yeah, with you there, Chives. I mean, this is the kind of code bases. Like, my grandpa was an electrical engineer on the lunar lander for Apollo 11, and this is the sort of stuff he was building with. It's not the types of systems that you need in a modern, you know, global scale financial system. It's just silly to think that we're still working on this incumbent archaic infrastructure just because a monopoly that extracts rents to its shareholders every year can't be bothered to invest in. You know, they look at this stuff and they say, well, why bother? Because, you know, where's the pressure? Where's the public oversight? Where's the scrutiny? And I'm so glad that we are having more discussions around these rule proposals, around their opaque operations, and around a potential replacement system, because that's the only way that there will ever be, as you've said, any innovation whatsoever as we come to this state where there's been from day one, for the least recent past and for foreseeable future, really only one option here for a vast bulk of these clearing services that are so crucial to the stability, security, and salability of our tremendous, most advanced, developed, and liquid American capital market.
Yeah, one step at a time. And it's a great step that's been taken this week. And I'm excited to take more steps alongside this community that is growing and that is interested to, to see this change happen all around us. And, you know, as you've just said, and as we've said, it won't, you know, the innovation is not going to happen on its own. They're just not incentivized to do it. They already have their monopoly. It's easier to punch down and limit and try to regulate out of existence any kind of ATS that might try to pop up and provide some kind of competition. Or, you know, that's why I think focusing so much on the reality of the situation that we're living in here and all of the technology can provide and keeping it about providing that service, you know, that providing that education, providing that service, and not making it about any kind of profit motive. I mean, that's going to make it very difficult for an incumbent to compete with. I mean, if you know, you can't target nearly as easily a bottom line if it's something which is community driven and open source and, you know, a shared resource, a shared developer team, and all of that operating transparently from, you know, from around the world without specific expectation. I'm quite optimistic about how that will grow.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like that's the promise of blockchain itself, is that we can build something that can't be shut down by any one person, no matter how powerful a corporation or how stringent a particular foreign government might be. But it's, you know, you can build it, you can apply it, you can scale it. And, you know, there's a number of individuals along those lines and that say, you know, no matter how many guns you have, you can't shut down some of these challenges. And that's sort of the scalability, the resilience, and the security that we need from these systems. If they're going to compete, we'll, you know, if we all agree that the answer here is a replacement to the incumbent system, I think the only applicable, efficient, and, you know, today can be used system ready for application is blockchain transfer agent. And if you build something like blockchain transfer agent with the blockchain, that gives you innately the security that you do have the system itself operating independent of these adversaries, and that therefore you can use that blockchain transfer agent to really invoke a sweeping change.
Yeah. And what, you know, to add on to that, as people become more familiar with their custodial options, and not just investors, but, you know, issuers as well, they become familiar with, you know, what the differences are between these different choices that they all have regarding how the securities are going to be tracked and how they're going to be traded, then again, I think that self-interest is going to come in, and there will be a collective interest in this kind of alternative system, which, you know, and the way I think of it is, you know, that alternative system props up and that instigates, you know, finally lights a fire under the incumbents to introduce some more transparency and to become more friendly to the, you know, to their users. That's a big win as well, you know, and as the alternatives, you know, if as a alternative system, which utilizes modern technology continues to improve, that will put more onus on the legacy incumbents to continue to improve as well, where improve means provide more transparency and become more attractive to a, you know, an investor base, which is, you know, which is having more and more options introduced to them. And that is, you know, who's to say if they even will adjust in that way? There's been plenty of times market leaders in areas of the economy in the past have not chosen to do that. I think of like Blockbuster refusing to buy Netflix or something, you know, these kinds of examples. Happens plenty of times. So we'll have to wait and see. But either way, there can be better outcomes available for regular people. And that is a really thrilling thought. Well, I think we covered a lot of great ground here. You know, we've got a variety of folks listening. You know, if anyone does have any questions about anything, you know, in the first half of the call today, I went into some detail about that DUNA filing, what it is, what it means, why we went that route. I also talked about what some of the next steps were. And then, of course, John came on for some overview, like macro discussion about some of this motivation and why we're excited to be in, you know, bringing this sort of effort forward for the community. If there's any questions about that, I'd love to have you guys up. We've been going a little over an hour, so you know, it's about that time. It's coming up on that time, but I'm always interested to hear from folks. All right. Well, I mean, no news can be good news. It means we were thorough, eh? So we'll get this live, you know, on Taking Stock Networks Everywhere. John, how do you feel? Do you have any closing thoughts? Is there anything more that you wanted to discuss in detail while we were here today?
Well, it looks like you've got a tremendous future ahead of you, Chives. Ultimately, we're dealing with some real crippling, crucial, and unfortunately, under asked questions about governance itself when it comes to public goods. There's real differing challenges on how to really fund and develop and incent, as sort of the series with open source was about, putting together something that just operates for the benefit of humanity, which is what all organizations should be in the first place. But unfortunately, sometimes that gets mixed around with profit incentive. And, having this as my second blockchain startup, I see that. But I feel like we're really entering a stage of free and open source software where you can just build something that is intrinsically, inherently, and inconspicuously a benefit to all that can potentially access it, that creates, it's sort of like public transit in that it's about more than just the fares that you collect. It's about the real estate values that appreciate. It's about the jobs that get created along the lines. It's about the new housing opportunities that create social mobility when you can work in downtown and live somewhere else just because of that piece of infrastructure, that rail line that's in place in the city. It's something that has had a really tremendous effect on distributing wealth across European cities to the best effect that it can. And, it's something that has historically only been deeply promoted and activated through government action itself, enforceable taxation and direct, democratic, but still direct control over itself. And I think that's why it's really exciting that we're doing this as a grassroots, organic movement built exclusively by and for the people and to the benefit of them, because ultimately that's a governance hurdle that there's not much precedent on, because we've never had the technology to be able to connect at scale without these physical connections or geographic barriers, but instead just execute off of a shared ideas quickly, iteratively, without reliance on the legacy systems of distributing information, media, and viewpoints, and instead just bring it all together under a common enterprise without the traditional, another thing this banker of sorts said today was that there are aspects of organizing a company that will never work at scale remotely. And, there are extremely large operating Web3 projects that are entirely decentralized. There's never been a Bitcoin office. There's never been a number of projects. They don't have these centralized places where a definitive group council organizes labor and distributes profits per se. But instead, it's always been this distributed, globalized, and self-interested movement. And, to see something like that pop up in the securities market is really a step forward and a step function increase in the quality of the financial products that we can offer, not just ourselves, but to the billions of people on this planet who traditionally are disenfranchised from investing itself, from building a quality future with compounding assets, because they just don't have physical, social, or governmental access to these investment products, which need to be made available if we are ever to spread out the wealth of a society based on the idea of capital allocation in shares in a company. Because there are billions of people on this planet that have no way, even with the free brokers, there is no way for them to access these investment opportunities. And for them, saving means putting a metal roof on a mud shack. And that is not the key to generational wealth. And the only way past that is by solving this ownership conundrum that you've so eloquently identified in the space of how individuals can build up to their futures on a sovereign, autonomous, and decentralized basis, which is really the only way to alleviate ourselves of these compounding, systemic, and not well understood risks that propagate throughout the centralized rent-seeking and, dare I say, monopolistic financial systems in place today.
Oh, perfectly said. Can't top it. I'm just always excited to talk about this stuff and looking forward as a community to keeping that ball rolling forward. And it's so, you're so true. You're so right on this key point that I just want to echo before ending, that it's modern technology that is making this possible. Being able to trustlessly communicate, and do things like operate a governance structure, using the internet without intermediaries, without third parties, without data centers that have their own motivations when it comes to, you know, collating data and, you know, and all that sorts of thing. This was not possible until we had the distributed ledger technology joining the ranks of what was available to us as people. And, you know, and that's something which, you know, is open source, right? And that's people working together and letting go of legacy infrastructures that we've used for the entire preceding history of humanity to organize our societies. And we're still here at the immediate forefront, you know, of this incredible new moment in time. And it's exciting to think about that, to remember that this is an emergent reality, and that we're using it in this way to do something which really would not be possible otherwise. So glad you brought that up. We should probably do some kind of, I mean, we talk about blockchain a lot. A lot of our listeners probably get it, but maybe we should do a real deep dive episode one of these days, just to try to really make sure folks know. Or we'll do a page on it. One thing or the other, we'll figure it out, because that's important to understand as well, especially as we move into that space more and more, and people are going to be wanting to know how to control their governance tokens. It's an exciting time. Thanks so much, John, for coming on and speaking with me about this. Thanks so much for your help with the paperwork and everything that we went through in the prior couple of weeks and months. And thanks so much, of course, to all of the YDRS contributors, past, present, and future. What a week. Everyone have a great Independence Day. If you're not American, have a great July 4th just the same. And we'll see you next week. Have a great one, everybody.